I have to say I was a little bit surprised to be invited to this because I am not really a recumbent person. And I kind of feel like, sometimes I feel like I'm a devil's advocate here or an ambassador from the rest of the bicycle world. I don't know. I would like to open with a great phrase from Mr. Rodney King. Can't we all just get along? I'm not going to tell you guys about recumbents. Not much anyway, because most of you know more about recumbents than I do. But it makes me sad sometimes to see that, and it's not just recumbent people. There are dozens of different kinds of bicycles. And there is a tendency for people who own and ride and love a particular kind of bicycle to think that that is the only kind of bicycle that's any good. And to think that everybody ought to use that kind of bicycle. And that if everybody did, the world would all be a wonderful place. BMXers think this, fixed gear riders think this, mountain bikers think this, downhillers think this, unicyclists think this, touring cyclists think this, others that I've probably forgotten. There's so many different variants. I mean, even racers, there are racers too. And there are racers, and then there's time trialists, and then there's criterium racers, and there's trackies, and I mean, bicycling is not a sport. It's many, many different sports, and it's also, in addition to being a sport, it's a transportation, a recreation, and so on. It's a very big tent, and we're all really on the same side. And it really hurts me to see some of the internecine stuff that goes on. I mean, even I was just hearing, sitting at the table tonight, people talking about vituperation between fans of low racers and high racers, which I've been I will talk a little bit about where I see recumbents as being in a historical sense. The bicycle was basically invented around 1869. And over a period of approximately 50 years, there are all kinds of weird oddball designs for bicycles. Nobody could figure out what was the best way to build a bicycle. And they're all uprights. But nobody could figure out the best way to build an upright bicycle. Finally, around the early 1900s, the diamond frame was basically perfected. I own a 1916 Mead Ranger bicycle, which I ride often, and it rides as nice as any bike I've ever ridden. But over all those years, remember that in this period, the bicycle was the hottest high-tech transportation thing there was. And there were a lot of really smart people giving this a lot of thought. And a lot of these really smart people were spending a lot of time riding their bikes. And while they were riding their bikes, when they weren't dodging cow pies, they were thinking about, what if I made the wheelbase a half an inch longer? And some of these would try doing it. Maybe it was a little better, maybe it was a little worse. What if I change the angle of the steering head a half a degree? The upright diamond frame bicycle is a product of an extraordinary evolution. The basic form of it was, invented by Starley in the 1880s. And it has a particular geometric beauty, being, depending on how you look at it, being made of either two triangles or a triangle and a pyramid, which are both among the most perfect geometric forms that exist. And over the years, the shapes and sizes of those have been fine-tuned to an amazing degree of perfection. Now, the recumbent is like a kind of an earlier stage of that. And it may be that in 50 years, the recumbent will be the norm. Or that a recumbent style will be the norm. Right now, when I look around at the bikes I see, there's a million different frame styles and designs, none of which is completely satisfactory. And just speaking as a mechanic now, I see there are two fundamental problems that need to be addressed. And people are addressing. I'm not saying these are not being addressed. I'm saying they have not been definitively solved. The first problem is getting the feet to not interfere with the front wheel without creating other side effects. Now, obviously, none of the bikes have problems with feet interfering with the front wheel, but as a result, most recumbents have unsatisfactory weight distribution, either too much weight on the rear wheel or too much weight on the front wheel. Ideally, you would like to have something in the range of 50-50 weight distribution of a vehicle. Maybe a little bit more on the back, as, for instance, a typical upright is like 55-45. The other problem that I see as a mechanic is the drivetrain issues. It really bothers me, as speaking as a mechanic, to see the driven part of the chain going around a bend. Idlers are nice, and they're reasonably efficient, but a pure straight chain drive is about the most efficient transmission system that's ever been invented, and any kind of an idler is going to detract from that. Also in the drivetrain area, there is kind of the question of supporting the whole crank area, because on a one of the beauties of the diamond frame design is that that's the strongest part of the bike is where the bottom bracket is, and it's heavily triangulated. On a recumbent, because you're going to have the boom out there, you just have to use a big, humongous pipe, which is heavy. But and I have not ridden that many recumbents that I can tell you if there's more of a flex problem. This is what I see as speaking as an outsider into the recumbent community. These are the problems that I think need to be worked on. It's entirely likely that solutions will be found. And I do not mean to diss recumbents. I like my Greenspeed recumbent. I have balance issues that make it very difficult for me to ride a recumbent bicycle. But obviously, not everybody does. I like the riding the position. I do see, aside from the mechanical aspects, I see basically two other major hurdles. One is that they are awkward to transport. Diamond frame bicycles are not that easy to transport either. And the other is, of course, that since the design has not been standardized and they remain a niche product, they don't get the benefit of modern mass production. And so the prices are way higher than similarly equipped uprights. And there's no easy solution to that. As they get more popular, and I believe they will get more popular, that is going to be probably less of an issue. The prices are already going down. We're starting to see a number of manufacturers now going to Taiwanese production. But even that Taiwanese production is not, those are specialized setups, whereas the, let's see, the number I heard is a typical aluminum diamond frame out of Taiwan. A decent frame costs $8 to manufacture. That's tough to compete with. There's something also that I have a little bit of a bias toward being as I'm in the business, is that the general public, at least, has the idea that if you're a bicyclist, you have a bicycle. I would like to see more people think about how many golf clubs a golfer has. How many pairs of skis here? There are so many different kinds of bicycles that it's fun to change them. I have about 30 of them myself. Every one of which is weird. Not one of them is like a stock bicycle. They're all bikes that I took this kind of frame and that kind of gear system and that kind of handlebars, and I've mixed them all together, and nobody would have thought they'd work together, but they do. And obviously, I can't ride them all equally, and every so often, I'm digging in the back of my cellar, and I see in the back corner this bike I haven't ridden for 6 months. And I dig it out, and I take it out, and I go for a ride, and I'm immediately struck by, I forgot how much I like this bike. And even, you know, even in the getting back to the recovery, so I have my green speed trike, and I have my uprights. And the transition between them, I find to be absolutely delightful. When I've been riding the uprights a lot, I really get off on the comfort of the recumbent position, and I love the maneuverability of the trike, and I love the fact that I can roll up to a stop and just stop and not have to do anything else. But then when I get off the green speed and I get back on upright, and suddenly I'm way up high in the air, I feel like I'm the king of the world. And I love all bicycles that are real bicycles, and it hurts me sometimes to see people that favor one kind of bicycle. Since I'm speaking to this audience, it's recumbent people, who feel that they have to knock other people's bikes or other people's preferences. Upright bikes have real virtues and real values. A lot of people get a lot of pleasure out of them and don't find them uncomfortable. And basically, I say, can't we all just get along? And now I think I'm ready for a Q&A. Oh, and I've been specifically instructed, no questions about your Ranger Railers.
Yeah. So now, what's your take on the semi-recumbents, an upright bike with the...
Well, actually, that's an interesting point. It's not a hard and a fast division. And basically, we all ride in the same position. Our whole bodies are just rotated at different angles. And there is no reason that there needs to be a hard and fast demarcation. In fact, I'll tell you that as an upright rider, I prefer a more relaxed seat angle, and I run my saddle just all the way back on the rails, and I use a short handlebar stem, and I like it to top to. So I'm, even as an upright rider, I'm a little bit in the recumbent direction. And actually, these flat foot type bikes, we sell them, our company sells the Electra ones, which is one of the popular ones. They're pretty surprising, and they really meet a real need for casual cyclists, because, okay, you guys can all get up on recumbent bikes. I have trouble even doing that, but a lot of people have trouble getting up and going properly on an upright bike, because they expect to be able to sit on the saddle and have their feet on the ground. These newer bikes with the more laid-back seat angles, or effectively more laid-back seat angles, because some of them actually have the bottom bracket moves forward a little bit and a more conventional-looking seat. They provide that. There are unobvious things about them. I was test riding some. I was out at the Las Vegas demo part of Interbike last year or the year before. And there were a couple of the two hot ones were called the Giant Revive and the Electra County. And these both had what looked to be similar geometry. And I test rode them both. And that the course involved a long, very steep hill. Something like this hill, and not only longer. And although the bikes looked similar, the riding positions looked similar, the Electra climbed pretty nice, and the Giant was an absolute pig going uphill. Partly it wasn't geared as well, but the gearing wasn't that bad. It was just something about it, and it was heavier, but I don't know. Because there's also the whole question of whether you're using gravity or if you're pushing against something with your butt. And that is not actually a purely recumbent versus upright issue. In fact, there was an Italian time trial team a few years back that were using some kind of straps that would go around their hips and attach to like the front part of fitting on the top so they could get more pressure out of it. And of course the UCI
Bandit. But
you can get everything.
Don't get us started.
You know, just to say a little bit in favor, in support of the UCI.
We don't allow that.
It's a function of what your objection is. And it's a little bit like one design sailboat racing. And their idea is that racing should be purely a competition between athletes. And that ideally, well, it should be the little 500 with everybody riding the Huffy one speeds. And that'll tell who's the better rider. Whereas having different riders having different equipment, not to mention pharmaceuticals. and that's a valid viewpoint. It's not a viewpoint that I share, because another viewpoint about competition is that it should, at least in a technical-oriented sport, is that competition should help improve the equipment. My favorite example of this actually comes from auto racing. In the 1908 Indianapolis 500, one of the drivers, a man named Ray Haroon, won the race because he had a secret new technological invention that he had come up with. Nobody ever thought of it. And it gave him an unbeatable advantage in maneuverability. And immediately afterwards, all the other racers he had beaten demanded, insisted that they ought to ban the rearview mirror. Take them to the fair advantage. You know, I've in talking with non-bicycle people, a surprising percentage of the general public, if you say recumbent bike, they think, oh yeah, I ride one of those at the gym.
Yes,
I am. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a bike, technically it's a unicycle, because they only have one wheel.
Do we have any other questions on
that? Sheldon, does this left-hand drive bike that you just built up, does it feel any different?
Okay. I mentioned that I have some weird bikes. My latest bike is one of my weirdest. It's a 3-speed fixed gear, which is already pretty weird, with the chain on the left. And I took a bunch of pictures of it, put it on the website, and all like that. And it's purely a hack. It rides very nicely. It's a Gunner Street Dog frame, nice steel frame. I happen to be very partial to steel frames for no particular technical reason. It's more aesthetic. But that bike, no, that's not the first time I've done a left-side drive bike. And that feels okay. The first one that I ever did was on a Raleigh International frame. And that was a rather less stiff frame. It's a nice frame. I still have it. In fact, it's my current favorite bicycle. Now it has a Nexus 8-speed internal gear hub in. But for a while, it was a fixed gear with left-hand drive. But I found that to be intolerable, because when you ride a conventional upright bike, they all flex as you pedal. Every upright bike you've ever ridden flexes a little bit as you pedal. When you put the chain on the other side, the direction of the chain of the flex is reversed. So it's like it doubles in terms of perception. And when I did it on the Raleigh International, it felt really loopy and floppy. The Gunner is a much stiffer frame, and I've got a narrow tread Sugino AP tandem crank on it, and that one feels fine. We'll see how long the hub holds up, because the hub is not really designed for left-hand drive. I mean, you know, the right-hand gear ring there is screwed in real tight, but there is nothing to really keep it from unscrewing. I only have probably 20 miles on that bike so far in that configuration.
Well,
yes.
Thoughts on front-wheel drive?
Oh, front-wheel drive presents serious technical challenges. If those challenges could be solved, I think it's wonderful. When I was a teenager, I had a Solex moped, which had a little gas engine that sat over the front tire and a little carbon and the bushing on the crankshaft, that right on top of the front tire, and that was the clutch. I could never get the fuel pump to work. I had to have like a little ear syringe full of gasoline, and I'd squirt some in the carburetor. It would run for like 20 seconds, and then it would start to stall, and I'd give it another squirt. Not a very practical vehicle. But the thing is, a two-wheel, front-wheel drive vehicle has the most amazing turning performance. It just, because that front wheel just pulls you right on. With a rear drive two-wheeler, if you get the front wheel turned too far, it goes boom, like that. But with a front wheel drive, instead of relying on and momentum, it can just, yank you around in a circle. And I noticed a couple of front-wheel drivers out there. I guess those are prototypes or home builds or whatever, but they look nice. Obviously, they're not going to be as efficient a drivetrain because they got a 90-degree bend and a twist as well in the chain. But aside from the drivetrain efficiency issue, maybe they have torque steer, I don't know. But the basic concept of front-wheel drive, I think, it would be a very desirable thing if it could be made to work. I would mention that front-wheel drive is not a new idea.
No, it is not.
For the first 40 or 50 years of the existence of the bicycle, virtually all bicycles were front-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm. They had no change.
Yeah.
Right over here.